I am Planta on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. A few years ago, Laura Penny wrote one of the best books ever, Your Call is Important to Us, The Truth About Bullshit. It was a timely treatise against the bullshit around us. She returns now with a new book, equally timely, lively, and fascinating. The book is called More Money Than Brains, Why School Sucks, College is Crap, and Idiots Think They're Right. It looks at our popular culture in North America and how we seem to celebrate the loudmouth ignoramuses in the media and politics and how education is devalued. Laura Penny joins me now from Toronto. She has been described as one of the country's funniest and most incisive social critics. The last book was a bestseller and a critical hit. She has a PhD in comparative literature, an MA in theory and criticism, and a BA in contemporary studies in English. She's a university instructor at Mount St. Vincent University in Halifax, but lest you think she's some sort of egghead, she's hip to the cultural vernacular, making this book a fascinating read. More Money Than Brains is published by McClelland and Stewart. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Laura Penny. Good morning, Dr. Penny.
Hello, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. As I said, the last book was a favorite of mine. That was a success both in Canada and the United States, was it?
Yeah, it did certainly much better than I had hoped. Whenever I write on the presumption that it's a swan dive into the bargain bin. So I'm always pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. And so this is the second book, is it?
Yes.
Yeah. What took so long? It was 5 years between books.
I wrote a dissertation in the middle, which is kind of like a book, except hardly anyone reads it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, this book looks and takes aim at anti-intellectualism, which is, I guess, has it hit its apex in our continent over the last few years?
Well, I have to say that I was a little worried during the summer of 2008 because I thought that maybe I was dealing with something that was a Bush-era problem that was on its way out. I mean, if you remember that summer, that was the summer when Harper and Dion were fairly neck and neck and it looked like there might be an election in the fall. That was when Barack Obama was picking up steam. So, frankly, I was quite nervous this summer that, you know, I was too late to talk about this. And then, you know, they rolled out Sarah Palin, and the backlash to Obama became more pronounced, and Harper is still somehow running things, and, you know, I don't take a lot of pleasure in being right, but I do think that anti-intellectualism is a serious problem now, yeah.
Well, we've had it throughout history, right? I mean,
for sure.
In the United States, Andrew Jackson.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely something that comes and goes in cycles, and I don't think anyone consciously self-identifies as anti-intellectual. I think that it's more a question of them thinking that the fruits of intellect are just false or phony or chimerical in some way.
Yeah. In the book, you write that the election of Barack Obama was a sort of revenge of the nerd moment.
That guy's a nerd.
Yeah.
And even and so were the founding fathers, right?
Yeah. And do you think that with the rise of Glenn Beck, that anti-intellectualism will be the unmaking of the Obama presidency?
It's certainly something that will hobble the presidency, I think. I mean, one of the arguments I'm making in the book is that public figures have the latitude to be a billion times wealthier than the average citizen, but no one in public life has the freedom to be several or a million times smarter than the average citizen, right? So, yeah, I mean, I don't think Glenn Beck fans they're certainly not the majority, obviously, but they're exceedingly vocal, surpassingly unhinged, and I think they and people like them give him a lot less room to maneuver. I mean, if you paid any attention to the way the healthcare debate went and how things like the public option were slowly but surely taken off the table, I think it definitely constrains what he can do for his fellows on Team Nerd.
And the Tea Partiers, do they have a point, or are they just being exploited by people like Beck?
whenever I see the Tea Partiers, I just feel like saying, you know, you're going the wrong way, right? Like, you're yelling at all the wrong people. That it's the people they adulate, like Sarah Palin and Reagan and Beck, who've all supported the policies that have kept their wages stagnant, that have made many of them unemployed, that have, you know, made them less able to get the economic benefits they think they're entitled to. I mean, it's certainly not the poor Mexicans who pick fruit that are taking their jobs, as South Park used to say. But, yeah, I mean, the other thing that's kind of fascinating about the Tea Party is that it's just this overlap between this English-only movement, where people are very angry anytime they hear Spanish in the public sphere, with virtual borderline illiteracy.
Yeah.
It produces a lot of really fantastically contradictory protest signs, to say the least. I mean, look, the Tea Party people are, they're people who are angry at everything that has happened in the world since Hee-Haw was canceled. And it's a purely reactionary, illogical movement that abuses history in a serious way.
In preparing for talking to you today, I went back and I looked at the clip of you on 60 Minutes.
Oh.
And you talked to Morley Safer about the bullshitters in political life in the United
yeah.
States at the time. Bill Clinton, Ari Fleischer
yeah.
were two that you mentioned. Is Barack Obama a bullshitter?
Well, look, I mean, anyone who makes it that far is going to have to grease the wheels with a little bullshit, right? I mean, you can't get to be president without the stamp of approval from corporate lobbies and that sort of thing. I mean, I do think, and it pains me somewhat to say this, that he is a bit more honest in his self-presentation, that I don't feel as nauseous when he's speaking as when I hear Harper or Bush or any of those people speak. And part of that is purely generational. I mean, he really is the first North American leader who is not a baby boomer or out to destroy the 60s, right? Which is what we've seen as leadership for quite some time now. So, you know, I do feel like he's an improvement in some ways, but I also feel like what he can achieve is going to constantly be curtailed by things like anti-intellectualism, you know, racism, fears of socialism.
In Canada, you mentioned earlier 2008 when we saw Harper and Dion. This run up to this supposed election that never happened. You're seeing a lot of this come about as well with the Harperites and the liberal leader Michael Ignatieff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I'm not, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not a huge fan of Ignatieff, like, but the campaign that the Harperites have run against him, you know, makes me want to like him because it's straight up anti-intellectual. It's all about how he's a brain and a bore and a panty waist who reads poetry. And I mean, the thing that's really galling about it is that all the attacks on Ignatieff actually conflate two different kinds of elitism. And one of them is, of course, you know, intellectual elitism, the fact that, you know, he has worked at Harvard. But then the other one is that, you know, he is a privileged man, he's an affluent man, and I can't think of anything conservatives love more than money. It's pretty rich and creamy for them to give someone a hard time for making a pile of it or for being successful internationally, when a few short years ago the National Post had a daily article about the brain drain and how every half-talented Canadian was getting out while the getting was good to go make big bucks down south. So that is, you know, it's appalling, really. And, you know, it's consistent with all sorts of other statements they've made about culture and arts and cities. And their general priorities are largely fear-mongering the elderly vote, which is why we're looking at a government that is increasing only one of its departments, that being jails, right? You must have seen that item about a month and a half ago, that Corrections Canada is getting a 20-some percent increase, and every other government department is frozen or cash.
Yeah. Now, do you find that the Canadian people are buying this message is resonating with them?
I hope to hell not. I do think it appeals to older voters, and sadly, that is the vast majority of voters. I think that Harper has done a very good job convincing, you know, an elderly couple in Red Deer that, you know, gangs and Muslim terrorists are coming to take away their Hummel figurines and their large screen TV, and that they should all be thrown in jail. So I hope it doesn't resonate, but I fear that it does with some constituencies who vote.
The third chapter of the book looks at our education system, and I think that's probably the best place to start.
For sure.
This problem. So I'll ask you the question that you pose in the title of the chapter. Is our school sucking?
Well, this is a yes and no answer, which is the kind of answer I hate to give. But I do, on the one hand, not want to encourage... there's a lot of intemperate rhetoric about the schools, right? Like here and in the States, you know, the public schools are always in crisis, you know, kids today, blah, blah, blah. So what I found when I actually dug into it is that it's not that terrible, actually, that Canadian students fare pretty well on international tests, that they, you know, do much better than Americans. We're not usually number one, but we're in the top 3 or 5 or 10. And parents, for example, tend to say that, you know, American schools or Canadian schools are terrible, Ontarian schools or British Columbian schools are terrible, but then they say that they really like the school their kid goes to, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, in the book I say it's kind of like, you know, everyone thinks lawyers are assholes except for their lawyer, right? Yeah. So at the micro level, obviously, there are, you know, some good things happening in the schools. On the other hand, if I can pull on my professor hat here, they're not very good at reading and pretty reluctant to do it. They're not very good at writing and don't really see why they have to learn to do that. And they can be pretty intellectually timid. Like, it's pretty clear that K-12... consists of a lot of being told the right answer and filling it in on a test. And, of course, that's the most, you know, cost-effective way to do education. It's the one that produces the most numbers people can argue about. But it's maybe not the best way to produce a populace that can be civilized, let's say.
And so because of the way the system is, do you think that that's contributing to why we value education, devalue, I should say?
Well, I mean, the thing about education is that all the language in education is so schizophrenic in a way. I mean, it's so love-hate, right? I mean, people tend to say that they trust teachers in some polls, and then, you know, you open up your newspaper and there's another op-ed about the goddamn teachers union and how they're standing in the way of progress. I mean, a lot of anti-education sentiment is in line with a lot of the anti-public sector sentiment that's been popular since Reagan, Thatcher, Mulroney. So, I mean, I guess what I'd say here is that as long as we're treating education like it's strictly a means to an end, like it's just a way to learn to make a buck, that we're going to have problems educating people, because I can't always walk my students through the process that will, you know, begin with them reading this essay and that will end in 5 to 10 years with them being able to feed themselves, right? And so they do tend to be a little impatient, right, that they can't fully give themselves over to being educated because it is just, again, instrumental for them, right?
I meant to look you up on the Rate My Professors website.
Yeah, some people really like Sam, some people really don't. I think they got rid of my favorite one, actually, years ago when I was still a king. Somebody claimed that I was the most annoying person on the planet, so I was like pretty proud of myself that day.
do people in academia check that out?
Well, I mean, I'm nosy, so I may not be the most representative nerd on this count. I don't think it's as popular as it used to be. I mean, I know they're up to 10 million ratings now, which is pretty great, but I don't see as many updates as they used to. And the other thing about Rate My Professors that I think is interesting is that the people on Rate My Professors are not making the same complaints as, like, Fox News or Barbara Kay or the National Post, that this whole canard that universities are, you know, hotbeds of socialist indoctrination. This is something you never, ever see, or at least I can never recall seeing it on Rate My Professors. I mean, on Rate My Professors, they get angry at people because they're boring, because they're too strict, because they expect too much, because they dress really badly, they don't smell good, they have a funny accent. I mean, these are the things that the kids care more about than being indoctrinated. So take that with several shakes of salt.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure you're asked this a lot. How do you remain plugged in and connected? I mean, you're in academia, yet you have a good grasp of the vernacular.
Well, I actually think that the older I get, the more I realize that my immature tastes may be one of my greatest assets as an instructor. Like, I feel like I don't get as many, you know, plagiarized papers because I do give them tales of spelling horror from places like FailBlog. I don't know. I guess I like pop culture. I think it's, this is something I argue a couple of times in the book, that it's way too easy to just, you know, say kids today with their Grand Theft Auto and their rap music. I mean, that's an argument that gets made every generation. People said the same thing about the talkies. People said the same thing about the radio. And if you look at the gap between Canadian and American test scores, you'll see that, you know, it can't be pop culture that's accounting for this, because, you know, my students are wallowing in all the same, you know, crap that their students are. So I don't know. I guess I just like the internet and the TV and pop music.
You say that you grew up with Three's Company, yet in the book you call it Drek. Did you ever like the show?
Oh, that's an excellent question. I'm absolutely sure that 10-year-old me thought it was hilarious. Yeah. I don't think I liked it nearly as much as I liked The Facts of Life or Different Strokes. But I'm trying to do there is, again, you know, make the case that it's not the medium that determines how dumb something's going to be, right? And this is the easiest possible argument to make. It's just to say, oh, well, it's all texting's fault, or, oh, it's all because the kids are on Facebook, that's why they can't read good no more. I mean, that's, you know, it's not an argument that's particularly helpful, right? Because we can't hop in the Wayback Machine and make all of this stuff not happen. So the key is really just to counterbalance things like the internet, which is equally awesome and equally awful. We're on it right now.
Yeah.
It's just to counterbalance that with a good education, right? I mean, one of the reasons why I feel confident about, or relatively confident about, my ability to use the internet is that I spent many years learning how to read and how to assess a factual claim or a rhetorical claim, and to, you know, just kind of think that because they're typing on Facebook, they can write now is naive, and to think that just because they're typing on Facebook, they'll never be able to write again is foolish.
I grew up with Three's Company, and I still occasionally watch it if it comes on the TV.
It's funny how much you notice the homophobia when you're older, isn't it? Oh man, every episode has a Jack is gay joke in it. It's amazing.
Now, you have a PhD. Would you rather have an HPD, a huge pile of dough?
I know. I can't say that I would. I have wanted a PhD for a long time. I have never. Let's just say that a lot of the people who have HPDs are pretty disgusting commercials for HPDs. I mean, Glenn Beck has a huge pile of dough. He's not a good recommendation for huge piles of dough. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not, you know, a lotus eater. I understand everybody has to make a living, and I do manage to do that, doing things I like and selling products I care about, like literacy. So, yeah, but I just, I don't think being rich should be the be-all and end-all of human existence, and I'm afraid that we're selling the little fetuses in my undergrad classes this bill of goods that they're not, you know, a full human person unless they are rich and famous. That is not going to happen for most of them.
Are you working on another book?
In the near future, yes. Right now, I'm mostly just flogging this one and trying to finish my final grades by the end of the week. But yeah, this summer I'm going to start writing again. I'm not sure about what, though, to tell you the truth. This book was actually, I mean, you know, it's not coal mining or grave digging, but this book I found difficult just because the stuff that I looked at was extra awful. Like, I think, you know, I think it was when I watched the hour of Glenn Beck and Ted Nugent at the Alamo offering political commentary that, you know, like, I actually felt curdled, you know, poisoned. Like, I might have to actually write about something I love for a change. So, but I guess this book is kind of about that too, right? I mean, it is trying to defend embattled people against the barbarian hordes. So,
this is such a great book, and it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. As you know, I've been a fan of the first book.
Oh, thanks. You're too kind.
Congratulations on this, and continued good luck.
Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. The book is called More Money Than Brains, Why School Sucks, College is Crap, and Idiots Think They're Right. It's published by McClelland and Stewart. Laura Penny, its author, on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.